another episode of Sound Radar, Games Radar's video game music and audio podcast. I'm your host, Sophia Tong, and today I'm joined by composer Jason Graves, who many of you know as the composer of the Dead Space franchise, but we're here to talk about his most recent project, Tomb Raider. Hi, Jason. It's great to speak with you again.
Hello. So nice to speak with you again.
So now, leading up to the launch of Tomb Raider, there's been a lot of focus around the music and defining the role of Lara and setting the mood for the game. So now that the game's been out for a while, how has the reception been?
Overwhelmingly wonderful from a composer's standpoint and from just a general game enthusiast standpoint. I don't think I could have predicted, even if you had said what would be your ultimate, it wouldn't be the response that I've gotten just in general about the game and about the music. It's one of those things where this might be a pinnacle for me for a while because it was so much work over such a long period of time, and you never can really tell if you're too close to it. I thought it was a really, really well done game, and the fact that so many other people are coming back saying the same thing is just very gratifying validation.
Yeah, and you've been working on this project for a while. How did it feel when you first landed the gig?
Fortunately, the release date was so far off, and they didn't hardly have anything done for the game yet, so it wasn't as overwhelming as it could have been. And also, fortunately, it was so far off. I had a lot of time away working on other games, so I was able to come back with some bit of perspective and listen to everything that they had put in the game. But from the beginning, I had this feeling in the back of my head it was going to be a big deal once it came out, but I tried to push that, keep that in the back of my head, and just focus on doing the best music that I could. And in the end, I'm glad I didn't think about it too much, because it ended up being so much bigger just from the marketing and the PR, the publicity and everything. It's one of those things you could kind of make yourself crazy thinking about it too early on. So it was definitely a head down, creative music, go, and worry about everything else later as it would come online.
So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the instrument that you customly created for this game. Did this thing come out how you had originally intended it?
Once again, I had no idea what the instrument would look or sound like going in. I mean, that was something, again, because of the length of time we were able to experiment and the freedom that we have for creativity, it was something that I was giving input on the types of material. I knew I wanted some glass. I knew I wanted some metal. I knew I wanted something that I could play with a bow. I knew I wanted some things I could play with mallets or triangle beaters. And aside from that, Matt McConnell, the sculptor, was the one really designing the visual aesthetic of this piece. And of course, he had all the information that I had in terms of gameplay and concept art and story. And we talked a lot about the purpose of the sculpture, but I never dictated, nor to their extreme credit, did anyone at Crystal Dynamics dictate anything to Matt in terms of visuals. So the end visual sense of this sculpture was completely him, and I think if anyone had tried to condense the deadline or, oh, I don't know, that shouldn't be red, that should be brown, that thing's too pointy, it's too big, you know, any of that kind of stuff would obviously result in a much different final product. So it's another one of those testaments to the developer's patience and trust and just letting another creative person who is completely outside the world of video games kind of do his thing.
Let's talk a little bit about Lara's theme. How did you go about finding the right tone in this reboot and then evolving that theme to reflect Lara's character development?
The theme, it's like there were two things stuck in my head when I first started the gig. And number one was, oh my gosh, it's freaking Tomb Raider, you know. I was pretty excited about that. That would have been even if I was using the original theme. And then the second one, almost the bigger one, because it was kind of on top of the fact that it's Tomb Raider, they also want to redo the same theme that they've had for the past, what, 10 or 12 years, I guess. And just like the rest of the game, I was afraid of overthinking it too much. And this was the very first thing I sent was Lara's theme. I was kind of expecting revision after revision after revision. So I thought, I'm not going to toil away for 5 days trying to come up with the perfect theme and send it off only to have it change dramatically over the next month or so. I'm just going to sit down in an hour, figure out something very simple, something that would be approachable and easy to recognize, you know, a lot of relatable intervals and things like that. Nothing too complicated, not a lot of notes. So three chords, five notes, spent about an hour on it, left it alone, listened to it the next day and said, well, yeah, okay, let me just send it off and let the revisions begin. And the killer was they never revised anything. So that kind of very relaxed, no pressure, just do something in an hour and send it, that was the final version of the theme. And what I really loved was I always do my themes on piano because it seems like the most vanilla way to present it. No one's concerned about the string samples not sounding proper or, you know, it's just a good piano sound. Everyone knows what a piano sounds like. Let's move past the sound and focus on the notes. But I really like this particular piano in the higher register, very simply played, because I thought it was a wonderful starting point for her character. It was very simple, it was very quiet, very introspective, and fragile in the upper octave of the keyboard. And Crystal totally went with that as well. And they said right off the bat, this would be great to have at the very end underneath her voiceover when she's talking. And maybe we could bookend it and have it somewhere in the beginning as well. But we don't want to use it a lot, but we would love to use it because we like the way it sounds, just very simply stated. And that was pretty much it.
So it sounds like you and Crystal had a really good working relationship over the last few years.
We really did. It was one of those things, even from the beginning, they didn't have a slew of composers submitting demos. I think they talked to two or three guys, and that was it. I didn't even have to, you know, no custom demo, no tweaking revisions of demos. A lot of other games love to do stuff like that. They just kind of talked with me, and after many, many hours of very exciting discussion, they came back a couple of days later and hired me. And I should have known from the beginning that it was going to be that kind of thing. But, you know, it's usually better to expect the worst and hope for the best. in this case, it was the best for sure.
So is it kind of uncommon to get that level of trust where they kind of just let you run with things?
It seems to be happening more frequently with bigger games that I'm involved in. It obviously depends on the developer and more specifically the audio director. Because the bottom line is, it's the audio director's butt that's on the line if they want to try something outside the box or try something unproven, whether it's their choice in a composer or the style of music that they're allowing the composer to kind of explore. And if it comes back and you've done 20, 25 minutes of music and nobody likes it, then it's everyone's looking at the audio director. So really, as a composer, our job is ultimately to make them feel comfortable with these creative decisions because they're going out on the ledge just as much as we are as composers. And that's the kind of thing that it's very personal, very game specific. But fortunately for me, I'm still around after 12 years. So every year it's more titles under my belt, more feathers in my cap, and more scores that people recognize. So that level of trust and kind of going out on a ledge, I think, becomes easier for the audio directors because I've got experience and music examples kind of behind me that say to them, it's okay, I can relax and trust Jason on this. They came to me originally because of Dead Space. They didn't necessarily want scary music all the time, but they loved the way that the music sounded unique in the world of games, and they wanted to brand this new franchise with some sort of a unique sound. We had no idea at the time that it would be the instrument, but that's what we ended up with. And the instrument is, you know, that's just the next step from experimental orchestra with Dead Space. Then it's experimental solo crazy instrument stuff with me playing it for Tomb Raider.
How involved were you on the actual implementation in the game?
I've never done any actual implementation outside of a game called Mark of Kree, where I was with the Sony Sound Tool implementing all of the music myself. With Tomb Raider, however, I was very, very close to Alex Wilmer, who was the kind of music editor slash music implementer. And he and I spent most of the majority of my time on the game was spent talking with Alex. He did all the implementation and we would have multiple hour-long discussions about, before I wrote anything, where the music was going to go, what the music needed to do, and then once we determined that, we'd take a step back and figure out the best way to implement it. And the greatest thing about Tomb Raider is every situation really has different needs in terms of interactive music, and Alex was completely open to trying new things with implementation with every different event in the game. So there was no hard and fast rule. This is the way the music's implemented. We're going to do it this way every time. So compose your music to fit into this specific pattern. It was new and different every time and appropriate for what was going on in the game. So while I never did anything myself, I was very, very hands-on with Alex in terms of how it went into the game. And a lot of times, halfway through, he was thinking up things that I wouldn't have thought of and vice versa. So it was definitely a partnership. It was in no way me dictating to Alex what to do. There was a lot of back and forth and a lot of everyone making sure that everybody else was happy with the way the music was sounding. In terms of, you know, really just being blatantly honest, memorable experience, I would have to say that it was the Final Hours video that they did, revealing me as the composer and talking about the music in the game. Because I've done promotional stuff like that before, more specifically with some of the Dead Space titles and one or two other titles, I think, but nothing. Again, this is just the way they work, but nothing to this extent. It was such a full-blown production. You know, they had the camera crew come out to my studio. We all hopped on the plane and flew to London and hung out with Zach and filmed all that. And just the attention and love that they put into that, and the fact that they really paced it and timed it and are so thoughtful and care so much about music for games, really meant a lot to me. And that's kind of one of those standing pieces, you know, a nice 6-minute video that it's wonderful to have a little package like that that you can go back to, and just in 7 minutes, it encapsulates the whole entire thing.
So do you have a favorite theme on the album?
Well, I think that Lara's theme is obviously the main one, but the reason that it's probably also my favorite is because of the simplicity of the intervals, like I mentioned before. And what I really enjoyed doing was kind of injecting the theme here and there in various forms and guises, different harmonies, and even putting some of the themes playing at the same time. I think that Laura's is my favorite, very elastic kind of a theme, and being able to really take the time to develop it and not just start out with the big bad action hero theme at the beginning of the game is one of the big reasons that I love it so much, because it really does have a proper evolution from the beginning to the end as her character develops.
I know in our last interview, you had also mentioned that you took those intervals and those notes and kind of rearranged them for the island. Do you mind going into a little bit about that? Because I thought that was interesting.
Well, what I thought was really cool from the beginning of the game is Laura starts out completely fresh, blank slate, no experience, no anything. She gets shipwrecked on this island, and by the end of the game, she's beginning to become the Lara Croft that everybody knows. So it seemed like the island and Roth, who's her mentor, are kind of the two biggest forces that form her character. So I like the idea of the island's theme itself somehow influencing Lara, and the same thing with Roth's theme influencing Lara. And Roth's theme has a little jump in it that's a fourth or a fifth, depending on where you are. So I like the idea of Lara's theme having that same jump. So there's Roth's stamp on her character. And the island itself, I had already written Lara's theme, and I was trying to figure out how to make it almost reverse compatible with the island, so that her theme starts out at the very beginning with maybe two or three notes, and that's it. So I was able to, quote unquote, build it up as her character developed and add more notes, and I wanted the, at least musically discernible, to be able to pick up on the island having the exact same shape for those first four notes, the only four notes of the island theme. Kind of goes up a little step, down, and then up a big step. And Laura's theme does the same thing, except she goes up a bigger step because it's in a major key, down, and then up a very big kind of dramatic perfect fifth like Roth seems. So you've got these four notes, and if you could see my fingers in the air, you would see how I'm moving them up and down. So the four notes of the island theme, really, they superimpose right over Laura's theme, except they're either very close and dissonant or very far apart, and there's really no key. They're intentionally atonal. And what's great about that is then you can put them over any piece of music that's in any key, and they work as being this kind of, you tilt your head and go, oh, what's that? Because it's all these leaps and jumps that kind of sound pointy in their harmonies. But you go back to those same four notes, and they're almost the exact same four notes. They're just off by a couple of half steps here and there.
And so have you had a chance to play through the game yet? What part did you like the most?
I've gotten up to the radio tower, which is one of my favorite parts, only because a lot of TLC went into that particular point of the game. Everyone knew that we wanted it to be kind of a false sense of hope because of everything that happens after the radio tower. And that was one of the very few cues that I did multiple versions for. I couldn't figure out how to crack the nut. And I think because the gameplay was so simple, she's climbing a tower and that's pretty much it, she's climbing. So the music was really inferring the whole mood the entire time. And I went through four different versions of music, and finally, when I submitted the fourth one, Alex, the music editor, actually went back and grabbed pieces of my third and fourth version and a couple of pieces from my first version and created this wonderful amalgam of music that all worked together, because while I was iterating these versions, I was keeping them all in the same keys. So version 4, section 2, was in the same key as version 1, section 2. So Alex was able to kind of crossfade them and put them together and build this Frankenstein monster of music in a good way. Maybe Frankenstein's not the best word, but you know, build this piece of music that totally works with the scene, but was never any single piece of music that I delivered to them. And it was one of those great examples of having a music editor with a great ear, taking the music that I delivered and cutting it up and getting something better than any of the single pieces I delivered. And it's one of the highlights in the game for me emotionally as well, because it's just so different from everything else. She's up in this tower in the sky, and the cinematography is just gorgeous, and you get to see the clouds and everything below, and it's like gold and blue. And that cinematic was also a lot of fun to do because it was so happy and major key. It was the antithesis of everything that had come before it and everything that you hear afterwards. It's kind of the bright shining moment in the first, you know, the first two-thirds of the game.
What is the most important element in a video game soundtrack for you?
The lack of repetition. That's a bit of a catch-22 of an answer, but really, if I had to give one answer, that would be it. The soundtrack on the album obviously isn't going to repeat, but I'm thinking the soundtrack in the game, lack of repetition, totally. But if I was not going to answer that, I would say intent, because that's the one word that I always think of when I'm starting out, you know, either a level or a battle or a cinematic, is the intent of the music, which again is a bit of a cop-out because it's such a wide term, but yeah, what is the music serving? What is its function right now? And if you can figure out the intent, then everything else kind of comes online pretty easy, at least for me.
And if you could score any game franchise, what would it be?
I don't know if I have specific franchises that I would want a name and put above others, but I do, in general, I would love to do a proper fantasy title, because I think the musical possibilities for that are just very exciting to me. And I have done a little bit with Heroes of Might and Magic, but I would love to do a proper full game. Or I would also happily do anything by Naughty Dog, because I think all of their stuff is brilliant.
And so what other video game soundtracks have you been enjoying lately?
Well, it's not really fair, but I'm just going to talk about all my friends because those are the soundtracks that I've been enjoying. So I've been listening to Bioshock Infinite by Gary Scheiman, which is brilliant. I love Gary's style. I've also been listening to Aliens Colonial Marines by Kevin Ripple, which is another fantastic score. But of course, I just love Kevin's style as well. Chris Tilton's SimCity soundtrack, I really, really enjoyed. And he and I were talking about it at GDC last year, not even last month, the one in 2012, last year, because he was working on it then. And it's just such a wonderful study in major keys and major sevens and Lydian and stuff like that. It's a very relaxing score, which you don't get a lot from video games. And I love the fact that I could kind of hear it being built, so to speak, as you're building your city. I thought that was my other of the three. That was the other one that I have really been enjoying lately.
So with indie games being on the rise these days, is that something you might be interested in the future?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, I think that the world of indie games are even more promising, creatively speaking, than a lot of these big AAA titles that I've been working on. For me, and I think for many composers, it's not really about the size of the game or the size of the music budget or if we can afford to use live orchestra or not. It's really about being creatively nourished. And music is music. I mean, I am happy to write music with all my instruments around the studio and just record and perform it all myself and do something interesting and creative that makes me excited than being strapped down into something where there's absolutely no creativity, but we're recording with the London Symphony Orchestra at Abbey Road. It'd kind of be a bit of a catch-22 there, because it'd be exciting to record with the orchestra, but the music, you know, if the music doesn't get you excited, then it's really not worth it. So in that sense, I think there's a lot of potential with indie games, because they don't have all the marketing duress that so many developers frequently strain underneath, you know, coming out on the back end of a cycle and they're getting ready to release it and marketing starts kind of making demands and we want it to sound like this or we're going to package it like that. That's the great thing with indie games. They're kind of underneath the radar, at least for now. I'm kind of seeing indie games going the way of indie films. Do you remember like 15 years ago when indie films were all the rage and Miramax was kind of the only company paying attention, and now every film company in Hollywood has an indie division, quote unquote. It's not quite the same. So I'm looking forward to indie games hopefully being indie a little bit longer before they start getting bought up by all these big publishers.
Man, marketing gets their hands onto anything.
Yeah, they really do. And the bottom line is, I mean, if it's not marketed properly, it's not going to sell. So they have, I think I read, and this is not an example that I'm using for marketing being bad. I read that BioShock Infinite had the same marketing budget as it did development budget. So they literally spent an equal amount of money on marketing as they did developing. And that's a great example where marketing is good. You know, they have a fantastic game to market and they're selling it for what it's worth. And Tomb Raider would be another example. The marketing was fantastic and just so well done and honest and to the point. But a lot of times it doesn't go that way, unfortunately.
So I know you probably can't talk about it if you're working in games, but just wanted to know, what are you up to next?
It is a bit of a excitement killer, not being able to kind of at least mention things that I'm working on, at least in the game world. And I understand they want to be as secret as possible so that when it's time for them to release who's doing the music, they have control over it. And the Tomb Raider example was my ultimate lesson, because I started getting tweets and emails and things a year before I was able to talk about it. And it was kind of, I'm gritting my teeth because it's really exciting and I'm working on it for so long, but then it was worth it because waiting, they did this wonderful announcement, a great treatment of, you know, talking about the music and me, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat. So yeah, I've got 5 or 6 different titles working that of course I'm not allowed to say anything about. Some of them come out at the end of the year, some of them come out in 2015, and that just seems to be the nature of games in general. What I can talk about are 2 films that I'm working on, because they don't seem to be as strict with their NDAs. So I'm doing one film that's called Adrenaline, that's about racing. It's classic car racing, and it's got John Schneider in it, and he does a wonderful job. And it's like a kind of a rock rock-based score, which I'm having a lot of fun working on. I play guitar and drums as well. So again, going back to the creative outlet, that's a wonderful project to work on because it's the antithesis of all this dark orchestral stuff I do. And then I'm doing a thriller. I don't think it has a title yet, but it's going to be kind of a hybrid score thriller with piano and electronics and some of the textures and things that I've been working on. And those are the two that I can talk about. All the games, they just have to suffer in silence, unfortunately.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time and for answering my questions.
It's totally my pleasure.
And that's it for this episode of Sound Radar. We have another podcast, Radio Radar, if you want to stay up to date with all the latest in video games. And be sure to go to GamesRadar.com for our ongoing video games coverage.